And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I am Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to this 11-win Gopher football edition for the first time since 1904 as the Gophers head down into Tampa and take down the number 9 Auburn Tigers of the SEC in 31-24 victory. Got a lot to get into tonight, fellas, but Luke, before we get into it, do you want to give the folks a word from anyone?
Yeah, absolutely. So as everybody knows, the Goal Line Club sponsored the 2019 season. I guess we're into 2020, but we still consider this the 2019 season. They will sponsor the 2020 season as well. We think it's a great partnership. I hope that they think it's a great partnership. But it's been a lot of fun to have them support us. I think that many of you enjoyed many of the events that they had put on all season. Looking forward to more events in the season to come, and as well maybe here in the off season. So if you're not a member, go to goallineclub.org and see what they have to offer. Consider being a member. All right, so let's get to this 31-24 win for the Gophers over Auburn in the Outback Bowl. First of all, fellas, Mr. Derek Burns, did you make it to Outback Steakhouse tonight to get your free coconut shrimp?
I have not made it yet, and probably too late at this point, but I did receive a couple texts from two different people that went and were happy to take advantage of that.
So that's amazing.
It was kind of fun to see that.
If anybody has a horrible excuse to go, it's me. I literally can walk to an Outback Steakhouse, and I did not make it.
Figuratively a 5-minute walk from your house.
Yeah, if that. But I didn't make it, and I've never eaten there, and we discussed that in the last episode.
So wild to me, but especially it's a 5-minute walk from your house. Like, are you so above the Outback Steakhouse that you can't even go there?
No, I go to the Chinese.
Is that what you're telling me?
I go to the Chinese food just down the way a little bit further. I like that more. Okay, let's get into this. I think this maybe doesn't surprise a lot of people that I was surprised that the Gophers won, and really the score doesn't dictate maybe how much they thoroughly dominated this game, Derek. And I think it really started with that offensive line. So if you want to heap praise on your former position in the game of football, you have the stage, my friend.
Well, I think there's a lot of praise to go around in the game. Specific to the offensive line, I don't know that anybody predicted that, given how lauded Auburn's defensive line was coming into the game. But one thing we've seen this season is the Gophers' offensive line has responded after having maybe a bit of a letdown. The Iowa game, not their best game against a really formidable defensive line. I thought the Gophers came back and responded well the next week against Northwestern. And then in the Wisconsin game, they didn't have their best game, as we know. And I know we're all tired of talking about those two games. But the point being, I had a hunch that they might, you know, given what they probably heard leading up to the game about how well Auburn's defense had played that this year, how good they were, and then maybe hearing about, you know, the letdown in Wisconsin. There's a lot of pride from offensive linemen, and I think that they responded well. And obviously the results justify, you know, that. And I mean, specifically, just to point out a few things, I thought it was Sam Schluter's best game of his career. What a way to go out in the end. We can, you know, when we get to offense, we can call out some different plays and things like that. But just all around the effort he gave and the drive that he had in this game was, I thought, outstanding. Ryan and I chatted a bit earlier. I thought Curtis Dunlap had an exceptional game. I thought John Michael Schmitz is a force to be reckoned with and a guy to really keep an eye on next year, a guy that's playing incredibly physical for a guy who's playing this early in his career. So a lot to look forward to next season. But just from a physicality standpoint, I really thought going into the game, that was one area that the Gophers offensive line can look to improve next year, was just being consistently more physical. At times they looked really physical. At other times they looked a little bit tentative. They really showed out this game, being incredibly physical the whole game. So great job for that group. It was really nice to see.
And I still think that Auburn's defensive line played pretty well in terms of the two guys that you thought were going to play well. Like, Derek Brown was really good and he was getting penetration. He was obviously getting double teamed quite a bit. but he was just like a half second late or a half step late in a lot of different times where normally he probably makes that play in a tackle for loss. Or Marlon Davidson usually gets home there and it's a tackle for loss or a sack. But Minnesota got just enough of them to really spring forward this offense. And that's how you run for 215 yards on a team that had only been averaging 115 against them. And I, you know, without sounding like a broken record, I agree with Derek. That was Sam Suter's best game of his career. I know I was talking with a couple of Gopher coaches down at the bowl game, and they both told me that Sam Suter, they thought, was the best offensive lineman on the entire unit this year. And I think it'd be a hard-pressed argument to really think otherwise in terms of most consistent and when he hits his ceiling, in terms of having a ceiling game like he did against Auburn. Look at how much better the entire offense was. I also think that John Michael Schmitz, and maybe this is a hot take, I think that he should be the center, and I think Connor Olsen should slide back to guard, because I think from what we've seen of Connor Olsen at guard and from what we've seen of him at center, I think he performs more consistently at the guard position, and that also allows John Michael Schmitz to be able to get onto the field where Minnesota can really work horizontally and also vertically. John Michael Schmitz can get in space. He's not afraid to be physical. He's a real big, tough SOB in that physicality aspect. And remember there, I think it was one of the on the final drive of the game, Derek, where John Michael Schmitz was asked with reaching a three technique, and he somehow got it, which is wild to me. And for those of you who don't know what three technique is, that would be essentially he'd be on Connor Olsen's left shoulder, and he has to get all the way across that guy's shoulder to turn him and flip him to give the running back a lane to go through. And Schmitz was able to do that. I also think that, I mean, you talked about Curtis Dunlap. He was tasked with going against Derrick Brown all game. And I thought that was his best and most consistent performance of the season. Blaze Andrews talked about it with me after the game. He kept telling me Curtis Dunlap played his ass off, man. Like he played his ass off. Now, Blaze then apologizes for swearing, as we will on this explicit edition of Gopher Gridiron Radio. But that's where the entire offensive line came to play. Tanner was not sacked on the day. He did experience some pressure at a few different points, but this offensive line came in as the certain underdog against one of the best defensive line tandems in Marlon Davidson and Derrick Brown in the country. And they certainly held their worth. They did a lot better than I think anyone thought. Derek, myself, I'm sure Luke, you're included in that as well. And they were sensational all day long. And that's why you look up at the end of the score at the scoreboard at the end of the day and Minnesota wins the game. Yeah. The offensive line played a tremendous part in that.
I don't want to overlook the tight end position as well in the blocking scheme, especially in the run success. They also were featured in the passing game more this game than the 3 years that Kirk Shiroka was here. That was a hot burn, I think. Maybe not. But I'll say this. Cokie, Bryce Witham, and Brevin Span Ford, I thought, blocked pretty well in this game, especially Cokie in spots, especially on a couple of big plays. In particular, I think he was one-on-one with the defensive end on the Tyler Johnson touchdown.
Yeah, he was one-on-one with Marlon Davidson there for like 3-4 seconds, and Davidson didn't get any pressure. By the way, when were you going to predict that this was going to be known as the Bryce Witham game?
Oh,
Bryce Witham played the best game of his life, both obviously with his two catches, but he was an absolute asset in the run game as well. On that, I think it was the second to last first down of the game. It was 3rd and 10. Minnesota went outside zone towards the Minnesota sideline. Witham had a huge block there along with Coe, and they were able to really seal the edge there. And then you look at what on that final run, Luke, it's Coe Keefe that's dragging the pile there with Sam Schluter, and
right.
Mo just keeps churning them legs. Clay Patterson really wanted to state his case that his tight ends deserve more love. And you look at scoreboard, Luke, not one, not two, but three tight end catches in one game. Sweet giblets.
Yeah, and if people remember the live event that we recorded, what was that, in July, late July, right?
Are you going to reference the Clay Patterson tweet afterwards?
Yeah, did you catch that? That was amazing.
That was sensational.
That was some shade there towards Shiraka. So those of you that don't remember that episode, Patterson on our live podcast called, he referred to basically a pie chart distribution as the Shiraka pie. And he referred to it in pizza terms as we need to get a slice of that Shiraka pie. And then what did the tweet say, Ryan? Did you happen
to remember? The pie never tasted so good. Minnesota gets so three tight end touches and they're huge in the run game and all game long. And how about Simon having the stones to, in two huge spots on two fourth downs, number one, go with the wildcat to the tight end, of which Derek Burns has been asking for all year long. He holds one Mississippi two. Green is able to execute the play fake, and he just throws it right over to Bryce Witham. And then on fourth and short, the game on the line at the 40, he has the stones to go with a pop pass to a one-handed catching Bryce Witham. I mean, Simon, to me, Derek, he had some stones in his play calling. We saw some different, at least I think we did in terms of what I saw. But what kind of differences did you see from Matt Simon in the way he called the game and some different formational things compared to what we saw for the last 3 years with Kirk Shiraka?
Well, a couple of things that stood out to me, just wanted to echo what you said about play action. We mentioned all year long that I think there was a little more opportunity in short yardage and goal line situations to go with some straight play action. And I thought that opportunity was there. And so they definitely featured that in the game against Auburn. That was nice to see, better late than never. Another tendency that I thought schematically was the best decisions, the best strategy they gave all game that they hadn't showed much of is running a lot more straight play action and less RPO. I really think that Auburn's strategy on defense going into the game was they played most of the game with two high safeties. They brought a guy down post snap a few times, but what Minnesota did in the passing game to counter that was they ran with more long play action as opposed to an RPO. So I really think that Auburn thought we're going to play with two high safeties and we're going to rely on our pass rush to get a rush on the quarterback. And we're going to use press coverage on the outside to force Minnesota to take longer to get rid of the ball. Well, what Simon and the offense did to counter that was the long play action. So they faked outside zone quite a bit. They rolled Morgan out a little bit at times. Other times, you know, it was just straight play action. And that gave time for those routes, things like long crossing routes, these long developing routes to get open. And it also occupied that front seven. When you give that long play action look like it's outside zone, now your defensive line isn't coming straight up field. They're trying to chase outside zone to the boundary. So it really helped isolate that front seven to get them off of the quarterback and get time for Minnesota's receivers to get downfield. The other thing I would add is with Auburn running a lot of that press coverage and really challenging the outside receivers for the Gophers responded by throwing almost exclusively, but predominantly to the slot receiver, which happened to be Tyler Johnson. So good job by the Gophers offense knowing that and scheming for that. And you saw a lot of those plays, those pressed outside wide receivers were really just guys eating up coverage. They're running short out routes just to eat up defenders and then really isolate that slot receiver to get downfield on things like the corner post double move route they scored on with Johnson and other things. So really good chess playing, I thought, by Simon, but also good strategies and some different wrinkles they hadn't showed before this game.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about Tanner Morgan before we heap lots of praise on Tyler Johnson as he exits his really impressive career, right? So Tanner Morgan, I thought this game in some ways was a microcosm of maybe the Gopher season in some respects. He starts off and kind of struggles early and throws that really bad interception, right? But then he bounces back and has a really, really, really solid game, right? I guess I'm impressed with a guy that's a sophomore that more or less starts off a bowl game as badly as you can basically start off a bowl game, but basically has the mental fortitude to turn around and then actually play a really unfazed game by that really bad play. I was impressed with what we saw from him there, the decision making and play execution. Ryan, you already referred to the Witham one-handed catch. incredible how, you know, you have a guy in your face and you kind of have a small window to lob it over before safety comes, and he was able to make a nice play there. A number of nice throws, including the Tyler Johnson dime for the game winner on the deep post, etc. But I thought he played well, after starting very poorly, Ryan.
Yeah, I mean, I'd give him like a BB plus, and that's still a very good grade. It's just on that first throw of the game there where from the camera angles I saw back, and Derek, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that the inside or that slot corner was certainly playing the slant. And that's where I'm assuming that Tanner was thinking that Tyler's going to cross his face. But the corner number one had was playing that so well because he knew the slant was coming. Plus, he had his eyes turned around. And then Tanner put it on the wrong shoulder of where Tyler Johnson would be. And that's how you get picked there. And I think that there was also some incompletions to where I know Rashad Bateman was very upset on a crossing route where he thought he could have been running. But he did bounce back. And that's where you saw him hit Tyler Johnson right in stride on the skinny post there, where Johnson just puts the safety in a spin cycle where he fakes the outside move, gets the corner the safety to flip his hips, comes back inside. Tanner put it right on the money where Johnson's going to win that foot race. And you saw him also put it only where Tyler Johnson could catch it on that first touchdown, of which I still have no idea how Tyler Johnson
did either of you guys see the Star Tribune picture by chance where he actually got that foot in, like, legitimately with a decent amount of room to spare? You know, on TV, they didn't have any angles, but the Star Tribune picture was really phenomenal.
It certainly was. And yeah, I think Tanner played fine. And, you know, I'd still like to see him. You know, I understand that there was pressure in his face quite a bit, but throwing off your back foot is still not a great habit to get into. And I know that he completed some passes on it, but when you look towards next year and what can he really take a step forward in, I still think the way he navigates the pocket leaves some to be desired at times. And I also think that just getting into a habit of stepping into your throws, especially with an entire offensive line returning next year, you should have a very clean pocket, considering what Minnesota had for essentially the entirety of this year outside of a couple of games. But, Derek, am I missing anything there on Tanner?
Well, I just think it's fair to point out, we've talked about this before, but the Gophers' RPO offense is really set up by scripting plays at the beginning of the game. And where he's run into trouble a few times is throwing early interceptions. And I really it's not an excuse, but I really believe a big reason for that is they don't have their RPO calls set up yet because they don't know how the defense is going to play each formation and each personnel. So early in the game, they're really trying to discover how the defense is going to play each set. And then they come back later in the game and they make those RPO calls for Tanner, and he knows what his reads are going to be. And a lot of times it's a two route read to one side of the field. So you called it correct. The play he threw the interception, the corner was shaded inside. Tyler put a move inside and realized he was cut off, and he broke his route off. And Morgan thought he was going to still try and peel inside of the corner. And it was just an ill-advised throw. It wasn't there. But again, that's one of those things where they saw that look and they came back later and they ran more slot to that side of the field and were able to get him off on different routes. So early in the game, sometimes those scripted plays, you don't have clean reads. You don't have your RPO things set up, and it's tougher for him. So, and I would agree with you in terms of next year, things to improve on. I think number one is pocket presence, throwing under pressure, and just being able to step up into the correct parts of the pocket and things like that. But overall in this game, made some great throws, hung in there against pressure many times, and, you know, had good reads, and better as the game went on, even better and better reads. So overall, I thought it was a good performance.
All right. Tyler Johnson, record-breaking day, beat his own record in yardage, set the all-time receiving touchdown record. I don't know if I'm missing any other records that he broke, but he also, you know, ends his Gopher career with 12 receptions, 204 receiving yards, 73-yard touchdown, two touchdowns on the day, the one-handed grab. Really an impressive way for him to go out. Really glad he came back and finished his career, because, man, that was a fun season to watch him and Bateman and Ottman Bell. I think Ottman Bell's often overlooked. but he is a crucial part, especially going into next season, was crucial this year in that win at Fresno State, etc. But man, was Tyler Johnson fun to watch this year, Ryan.
I mean, if you look at Tyler Johnson's day, 12 catches, 204 yards, 2 touchdowns, an Outback Bowl MVP. I mean, everything else you listed, I don't think you can really ask for a better game to go out on, where you're now number one all time in receiving touchdowns, passing Luke's favorite receiver, Ron Johnson. We now have the number one receiving yardage record passing Eric's guy, Eric Decker. Now he sits second all time in catches. What else could you say in terms of the way that Tyler Johnson should go out? And I think Fleck put it beautifully after the game for all the talk on this, on the social media machines about Tyler and, you know, different character questions, which I think are a bunch of hogwash considering I've known the kid for 6-7 years. And yeah, he's had a tough upbringing, but his character shouldn't be in question because of that. I think it's a really lazy take, but how else would you want to go out against an SEC defense that had performed very admirably all year? Well, the first tape that they're going to put on is going to be the Outback Bowl, where you absolutely blew up. And it's kind of just been a culmination of his career under Matt Simon and PJ Fleck, to where it's only right that Simon's first game and Tyler's last game, they go out just as they started, with Tyler being the star pupil, Tyler being the guy that is going to go win you the game with certain plays. Now, does it also help to have Rashad Bateman have the prettiest tunnel screen I think I've ever seen a receiver run in a Gopher uniform with for that specific play? But it just was a sensational day. And even to just put an exclamation point on it, that second to last first down run where Mo went around the left side, I already talked about Co there, I talked about with him there. Well, it was Tyler Johnson that was setting the edge there, where he helped with him chip, getting, and he worked vertically to the second level, got on the final outside player, and then he was the guy moving as Mo barreled into him. That, I mean, that is all about, as PJ Fleck would say, your how. He wanted that more than anyone else. He wanted to win that game. Sure, I'm sure he wanted a slice of the MVP, but Tyler just was sensational, and I just think it encapsulates, or, you know, really captures, I should say, just a sensational career for him, where there, I don't think there'll ever be another player in a Gopher uniform that I'm forever going to think of a slant, where he runs that, the slant and the post, just so effortlessly, to where you think he's not even trying, and then he runs the slant and he creates 3 yards of separation. They know it's coming. I can't tell you how many times throughout the entire season the slot corner or the corner in general would show him inside shape, knowing, hey, I'm going to take away the inside part, meaning you can't run that post, you can't run that slant, and Tyler would do it every single time. And that's where, on his final touchdown of his career, the safety is playing, you know, I can't get beat, I can't get beat. Tyler shows him an outside move for 2 steps, flips his hips, Tyler explodes back inside, and he is wide open. I can't sing Tyler's praises enough on just the career he had, the game he had, and the big spot moments, and then the one-handed catch out of nowhere to somehow get a foot down and be able to capture that ball. And I know that Derek thinks he should have had a touchdown before that, but anything else I missed?
I guess one thing I'm going to remember about him, well, many things, but he had some of his best games against the best competition. I can remember last year against Ohio State, at Ohio State, they couldn't cover him. I mean, it was like you mentioned, Ryan, they ran an RPO slant. Ohio State wanted to keep a linebacker in to defend the run. And Minnesota Ohio State tried to rely on their secondary to cover him in the slot one-on-one. And you got to imagine, and Ryan, you can probably confirm this, Auburn and Ohio State, they probably don't have a guy in the secondary who's less than a 4-star player. So
you'd be
good competition. Yeah, I mean, the best competition in many of those games, he was at times uncoverable. So it says a lot for what I'll remember about him is before the catch, probably the best receiver of the Gophers that I've ever witnessed before the catch. He was, you know, in a phone booth, just his jab step, his ability to get off coverage is what I think he'll be remembered for. In addition to all those, some of those, you know, going up high to get some of those balls over the middle, some of those great catches. But to me, just his ability to get off coverage in the slot and you know, uses quickness, to get open underneath is to me unmatched at this point.
That's an elite take, by the way, about Tyler showing up in the biggest games, where you look at in 2018 when Tyler really came on, set the single season record, of which him and Bateman both broke this year. The toughest games of the year. Okay. In 2018, there were Iowa. Tyler went for 6, 107 and a touchdown against Ohio State. He had 8 catches for 119 yards. You look at the other ranked opponent that Minnesota played at home that year, Northwestern. He goes 8 catches, 88 yards and a touchdown. Then you look at Minnesota's most important games of the year this year, here down the stretch. Penn State, 7 catches, 104 yards and a tutty. You look at Iowa, 9 for 170 in a touchdown. Now, of course, I don't think any fan's going to soon forget the fourth down slant, but he also showed up in these huge spot games, and that's what big-time players do, is they make plays when they matter most. And for the majority of his career, when Minnesota needed him to step up in a big-time game, he was there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think probably one of the things that a number of people will remember him, aside from being just an absolute gem on the field, is the fact that he stated, he came back to get his degree to set an example, not only just for, his family, but also for his community as well, right? And he comes from a tough area in Minneapolis North, but being able to set an example, he definitely deserves praise and kudos for that. Okay, I think before we get on to defense, we do need to touch on the running game a little bit. We haven't touched on either Moe or Rodney Smith. I think we'd be remiss if we don't touch on Rodney Smith as he closes out his Gopher career as well. But before we get to that, Moe Ibrahim, 20 carries, 140 yards. He was running like a man possessed, and he very much, without question, maybe to my surprise and maybe your surprise as well, Mr. Burns, he is head and shoulders the number one running back going into 2020.
Man, do I look back on certain points of 2018 season with regret? I certainly do. But Mo has improved head and shoulders more than I've ever covered from a Gopher running back. And he has certainly proven me wrong. I'll eat the crow. I'll take the L. And he ran as angry as I've seen a Gopher running back run since Mo last year, in the bowl game, of which now Mo Ibrahim is the all-time leading rusher in Golden Gopher football history in bowl games. And he's played in 2. That's Whoa. How good he's been. And that's how good he's been in these bowl games. And that's where his running style, I think, for the way that Simon and Shiraka ran the offense this year, I think his running style was certainly the most conducive for Minnesota to be able to gain yards. Now, we can't, go without talking about Rodney Smith, of which it sounds like Rodney's going to have surgery here this week to repair an injury he sustained leading up to the bowl game. He played through it in the bowl game, but maybe part of the reason why he may not have been as effective as what you'd seen previously, but Ibrahim has absolutely cemented himself without a sliver of a doubt as RB1 going into 2020. He is going to be the bell cow. He's going to be the guy getting 20 to 23 touches a game. And now it's going to be about what's behind him. But Ibrahim, at so many different points during this game, would turn a negative play into a 4-yard gain or turn a 3-yard gain into a 9-yard gain. And it culminated with that final play of the game, or final meaningful play of the game, where all he does is he gets into the B gap and he buries himself. I mean, absolutely buries himself between Sam Schluter and Coe Keith. And I believe John Michael Schmitz was in there. He just put his head down. He kept his legs churning and he moved over he's moving tons of people, like figurative and literal tons of pounds. He's the one driving the pile. Now, does he have guys behind him with momentum? Sure. But it's Mo, the one that kickstarted that. He had some incredible runs when Minnesota needed him most. And Derek, is there without a doubt Ibrahim's RB1? And how valuable was just his aggressive running style throughout this entire game?
I agree with you. I think he's absolutely earned the being the first running back next year, starting in spring practice. And as a former offensive lineman, one of the things that would just drive you crazy is having a running back get tackled by the first guy. You work your butt off and put your head in a vise to block some guy and get downfield. And to see the running back go through and have one guy, whether it's a safety or a linebacker, take the guy down or just drive you nuts. Well, that's why I'm sure the offensive line loves guys like Rodney and Mo, because as you saw in the game against Auburn, the first guy, I don't know if they ever brought him down. And there were plays where it took the third or fourth or fifth guy to bring him down. And that's what you like to see as an offensive lineman. But there are games like the one against Auburn where you need a straight ahead. Not to say these guys can't break tackles or aren't shifty, but there are times when you need a quicker hitting back. When you're trying to hit the hole fast, get upfield, as you said, take something that maybe it's not a great look. It looks like it's going to be a minus yard play and they're able to get 4 yards out of it. Or at times, you know, Gophers several times against Auburn ran the ball in a passing situation where the defense is a little bit on their heels. And, you know, these running backs are 10 to 12 yards downfield before you know it, before the defense can react. I mean, that's when this running style really pays off. And I think I would just close by saying, I think this running back group responded exceptionally well this year to the addition of outside zone. You know, coming into the year, it'd run a lot of RPO runs and basically predominantly inside zone with a little bit of power mixed in. And this year, adding the outside zone was just a revelation. And I think as far as the running game goes, was the big differentiator that took them to the next level. And so kudos to all those backs and the ability to run that and stretch that play, because it really changed things and made it awfully difficult for defenses.
I want to ask you, Derek, you remember watching back the first touchdown from Ibrahim in this game? I have absolutely no idea how he found the seam that he did. Because if you remember back to that, or if you're listening to this and you go back and you're watching the game, watch the crevice that he slips. I believe it's John Michael Schmitz and a linebacker. Schmitz just pushed the linebacker. Like, there can't be more than a yard of separation between them. Ibrahim cuts in between them mid-block and gets in for a touchdown. I've never seen that before. Like, he knew that was what he was setting up for. That was wild.
And I think that's you know, I do recall the player talking about, and I think that's a good example of talking about just getting upfield fast. And I think maybe people think that's a shot, saying, well, these guys are straight ahead, they're north and south, meaning that's all they can do and they don't have other abilities. It's not. It's a compliment. And he's a guy that a normal running back would see defensive jersey there and he'd make a cut, he'd cut back, he'd make a spin move or something. And you're right. Mo sees that. He sees a little bit of separation. Yeah, there's a defender there, and he just ducks his head and runs underneath both of them. So he's a guy that just, he gets upfield. He gets upfield fast. He catches guys off guard. And a lot of these guys trying to tackle him are in poor position to make the tackle because he gets upfield quick with a low center of gravity. So great example of what we're talking about. And I can't recall seeing something in that same exact fashion either.
All right, so maybe before we close out on just the offensive coordinator stuff, Mr. Burns, I don't know if you remember the very first podcast we recorded. We talked about a running back that was going to be coming off his redshirt freshman, his redshirt season, going to be a redshirt freshman, and that was Rodney Smith. So it kind of feels like an end of an era, actually seeing this guy graduate and move on. I just want to take a minute and just... what a special back, right? I don't think that they maybe even used all the versatility that he had, but man, was he a special player.
I mean, you're looking at the guy who has the third most carries in history, fourth most second most rushing yards all time. I believe he's the all-time leading all-purpose back in yards, and it feels like he's been here forever because, number one, he has, but it is the end of an era, and it's sad. And I mean, for me, I've known these guys for a long, long time. And I remember getting a call from Mundy Mills, Georgia, when Rodney Smith committed January, I think it was, it had to have been like 2013, 2014, and not thinking a whole lot of it. Like, I wouldn't not have guessed that this guy would have turned into what he did. And that's 100% credit to Rodney. And it's going to be weird to think about a Gopher running back room without Rodney Smith or Shannon Brooks. Now, Shannon wasn't able to play in the game because of he wasn't medically cleared. Now, I've heard he might have had some dental surgery, an emergency dental surgery, and he wasn't cleared before the bowl game, which is why he didn't play. So, I mean, I don't think anyone on this podcast is going to forget the Shannon Brooks game, I believe in 2015, 2016, where Shannon absolutely went off, just destroyed people all game long, had a crazy long touchdown run. I mean, with all the games that Rodney Smith had throughout his entire career as well, it's the end of an era. It's the end of essentially the Jerry Kill era with that running back room, where now we get to see how well Kenny Burns and PJ Fleck have recruited there, with the entire room is now gone of the previous regime. So we're going to get to see Kai Thomas, Jason Williamson, Bryce Williams,
Cam Wiley,
maybe Trey Potts. We'll see if he moves to wide receiver here in the spring, but it was the end of an era and another 1,000-yard season for Rodney. You know, he had some huge games when Minnesota needed him to throughout the stretch, and I'm going to miss him. I mean, I'm going to miss watching him play. He was one of my favorite guys to cover, one of my favorite backs to watch, especially when he worked in outside zone. When he was healthy and he was moving, I mean, he was a guy that certainly would be a force to reckon with.
Any parting words on those backs, Mr. Burns, before we move to offensive coordinator?
The only thing I would add is just we take for granted guys coming back from severe injuries. You know, it's part of football, but as a fan, you know, a guy, he tears a knee or goes down with a season-ending injury, and you go about your life and you come back the next spring ball or the next fall and you say, okay, well, he's back. Well, if you've been around guys with things like knee surgeries or injuries of that caliber, you can't overstate how much work that takes to come back. And you're talking about guys that have surgery and they're doing rehab the day they come out of surgery. I've been around it and it's kind of remarkable. You know, these guys are, you're kind of thinking to yourself, well, don't they need to put their foot up and rest on the couch for a couple of weeks? Nope. They're in the training room. They're literally taking the bandages off and they're moving their knee around. They're doing elevations. They're doing light weights and things like that to try and speed up that recovery and get blood flow and things. And it's grueling. I mean, it really is. So just a hats off to those guys for coming back from serious injury to battle through that and come back and be able to play and have meaningful contributions after that. It just is a testament to their work ethic.
All right. So let's touch on Matt Simon as the offensive coordinator. I know we touched on it a little bit with, you know, the difference in, you know, more true play action, et cetera. But Derek, what did you see out of him in a very small sample size as an offensive play caller?
Well, I think, okay. So play calling specifically, I thought was really good. You know, you have the strategy portion of it, which is things like game planning and going up and preparing for what Auburn's shown. But then during the game, you know, it's really kind of a game of counterpunching and how well you can play chess and react to what the defense did. And I would give him a really high mark for the Auburn game. I thought that besides, you know, some of the long play action and some of the short yardage play action passes we talked about, other things that he did that I think was nice to see, maybe with the blessing of PJ Fleck, was I thought they were a bit more aggressive at times, a little bit less predictable in some of the short yardage situations and a little bit more aggressive, you know, down the field at times when they needed to be. And I think that's what they need in a game like this. We talked about it, so I don't want to rehash everything, but we talked about it kind of at the end of the year that one of the ways we'd like to see the team improve is in these games against what might be an opponent you're not favored to win. You're going as an underdog. You need to be aggressive. And although they really held the ball well, you know, sometimes a team can make the mistake where, you know, holding the ball and trying to limit possessions, you know, you just kind of sit on the ball for three plays or you run inside zone and you just hang on the ball and say, well, we're going to play the possession game here. And I really didn't think they did that as well as they ran the ball. They also took shots in the offense. So all of those things are just to say that I thought it was a very well called game for Simon.
Especially for your debut and you're put in some tough spots where I don't know that necessarily going under center there that had to have been, now between the three of us, we have to be able to get this right. That had to have been the first snap under center all year. Outside of like kneel downs.
Yeah, I think so.
Can you remember another time outside of kneel downs where Minnesota ran an actual play?
No.
From under center? Derek?
No. No.
And from what my vantage point was, and from what I saw back on the tape as well, it was a botched exchange where Tanner didn't have full control of it. And then it comes down to, you can't advance. You know, I thought it was a poor spot depending upon where they blew the whistle and where they didn't. But you also have the Stones on fourth and one, or fourth and goal, after having two touchdowns taken off the board, to go to Bryce Witham with Seth Green. I mean, yeah, that takes some stones to be able to call the pop pass with Marlon Davidson barreling down on Tanner. And Witham is about a half second late on his release, and then he goes up and gets it. Yeah, that takes some stones. And that's what you need to win big games, is you need to take risks. You need to take a couple of chances here and there. And that's what we didn't see from Minnesota in that Wisconsin game. And then you saw it, you know, Minnesota came out in that fourth quarter and really earned the win. Like, it wasn't one of these, well, Auburn was the better team. Auburn was not the better team. Minnesota out-executed them. They outplayed them. I think a large part of that comes back to the offense being so good offensively. Minnesota scored 24 first-half points against Auburn. This is the same defense that allowed 23 throughout the entire game to the top team in the country in LSU, and Auburn was on the road in Death Valley. Minnesota did that in one half. Now, they ended up with 31. I understand that. But we're still talking about an offense that was really dang good. And that's where I think Matt Simon has certainly put his best foot forward in terms of for the OC job. Now, I don't think that he is the top candidate, or else he would have been awarded the OC job after the game. But it's certainly something we're talking about on Gopher Illustrated a ton right now, is that open OC position. And if you want to know more, again, come on over to GI.
All right, so before we go to defense, we want to get another word for the Goal Line Club. Again, check out their website, goalineclub.org. There you can become a member and support Gopher football. In addition to that, you can sign up on their website for a number of events. And if you are a member, you can get discounts to a number of those events, whether it's the preview, any like the signing day social, the tailgates, etc. So make sure that you do that. Become a member now today. So one, you don't have to figure it out before the next tailgate or whatever event it might be. Maybe it'll be a little bit lighter on your pocketbook to do it now rather than later. Again, this is a tax deductible donation that goes to Gopher football, etc. And it's a great group to be a part of. So go to goalineclub.org. All right. Here we go to the defensive side of the ball. This specific game, just think about this. Auburn put up, 49 points against an Alabama defense, and the Gophers only gave up 24, 7 of which came, or actually 10 of which came off of an interception inside your 10, and you gave up another special teams touchdown. We'll get to special teams later, Ryan. If you can please hold that anger for just a moment, I would appreciate it greatly. But man, this offense, definitely was able to put up a number on Alabama, but a pretty impressive showing from the Joe Rossi crew, Derek.
Yeah, I thought that, going into this game, I thought that the Gopher defense really looked their best when they were making aggressive play calls, you know, things like blitzes and stunts and exchange blitzes, things like that. And I think where they had really gotten hurt up to this game was sitting back in coverage and kind of playing softer. And I will admit that in this game, I was wrong. They played a lot of, especially on third downs, they played a lot of coverage, a lot of packages where they only rushed three or four guys. They dropped guys into coverage, and they were, other than the long kind of dink and dunk drive that Auburn had in the third quarter where they ended up scoring, that was really the only time I think it hurt them. I think for most of the rest of the game, they presented a good challenge for Bo Nix, mixing up man coverage with some straight zone coverage, keeping things, unpredictable. And I think the coverage paid off. I think the secondary was exceptional. So from a schematic standpoint, that was a game where they did the same thing against Iowa. They tried to sit back and play coverage, and Nate Stanley really picked them apart. In this game, it paid off for them. They sat back and played great coverage, it really paid off for them in the long run. And, of course, as the game went on, as Ryan mentioned, I think Auburn was put in a place, that an unfamiliar place, having a team score 24 points and getting into a little bit of a track meet. I think that was kind of uncharted territory for this offense. And I think it for Auburn's offense, and I think it hurt them and you know, ultimately worked in Minnesota's favor.
I think that this may have been, as a collective unit, the secondary's best game of the season. Now, there was a coverage breakdown on one of the touchdowns, of which, between Derek and I'm still not certain who the coverage bust was. I would say Braylon Oliver, because with just the way it kind of
because I told you stone, that, that's why.
Yeah. Just the way it kind of looked there. But, I mean, Chris Williamson maybe had the most underrated play of this game that no one's talking about. And that's when Auburn went to the reverse pass and they tried to get tricky. Well, it was Chris Williamson's guy, and Chris snuffed it out. And that was on a huge third down near midfield. Auburn tried to get tricky. Chris snuffed it out. Bo Nix ends up throwing it away. Instead of a big play or a touchdown, it's a punt. I mean, that's huge. You also saw Coney Durr and St. Juiced. I think they set the edge incredibly well. And that's why you saw Auburn essentially abandon the jet sweeps and just the different actions laterally, is because the Gopher corners were doing such a great job of kicking it inside. You also saw Jordan Howden, and you also saw Antoine Winfield, I thought, tackle well in the box. And then we don't even – it's tough to tell from the TV copy, but certainly from the amount of times where Minnesota dropped 7-8 guys into coverage, it didn't rush anybody trying to make sure that Bo Nix couldn't slide out of the pocket too many times. The coverage was really, really good downfield. And credit to Joe Harris-Hemiak, credit to Rod Chance for getting those secondary guys ready. And it was just a weird – I mean, I say this because there weren't a ton of splash plays defensively. And what makes it even more special, and there's two things I point to for this defensive performance. Number one is third down. Auburn had three converted third downs all game. They were 1 of 4 on third and short. That is so tough to do, considering you have the shortest amount of distance to travel. Bo Nix was 1 of 6 for 24 yards on third down. And I would also say they were put in a lot of tough spots, and they were incredibly resilient. Whether it was the interception that on their first possession of the game, Auburn gets it at the 12. Well, Minnesota stands tall. They play the run well twice, and then St. Juiced bats it away to force a field goal. That's huge. You're saving 4 points there. And then you look at with the way how inept Minnesota's kickoff unit was. Auburn was regularly getting the ball between the 30 and the 40. So you're already on a shorter field than what Auburn was pinning Minnesota at, and you stood tall so many times where you could have bent and really broken, but you didn't. And I think a large credit to that goes to Joe Rossi. I mean, the statistics don't overwhelm you, but with how well Minnesota played in those tough spots and how well they played on third down, that's what stands out to me.
I think statistically too, I mean, I don't have exactly the number of plays they ran added up at the moment, but they statistically, they run a ton of plays normally offensively, right? And you can see that reflected in the time of possession, right? The Gophers held the ball for 37 minutes and 35 seconds, which is a testament to the offense. But then Auburn, by contrast, only held the ball for 22 minutes and 25 seconds. You know, basically the pace was dictated by the Gophers and not by Auburn, which is both a testament to the offense and defense. But to me, that's more of a testament to the defense getting those guys off the field on third down and not extending drives throughout the majority of the game, right? Okay, defensively, some guys we should probably talk about is their careers are coming to an end. Maybe I'll let you guys, I'll open the floor real quick with anything else you guys wanted to touch on defensively. I know we talked a little bit about the defensive backfield, which was really good, but anybody up front, linebackers, Derek, you got any other things you want to touch on defensively?
Well, I thought that, you know, I like to talk schemes and talk about formations and coverages, but I think it's fair to say that although the Gophers played very conventional on defense, they were very fundamentally sound, and they just played really hard. Of course, you always give good effort in every game, but you could just see that the execution and the effort, and a couple guys I would call out specifically, Thomas Barber, Sam Renner. I mean, two guys that really just, you could tell were well coached. You know, I remember Auburn running a swing pass late in the game, the first time in the game, and Thomas Barber reacted to it and blew it up as if he had seen it 25 times. And that, to me, says, there's a guy that's been coached up well in practice. They've been scouted well. They've been prepared for that. And then Sam Renner, again, a guy that has really, it's been his calling card the whole year. When he's gotten a sack or a tackle for a loss, it's always an effort play. It's a play where he runs a spin move, has to power through somebody, a bull rush, whatever it is. It's not because of a missed assignment or, you know, a missed blocking or something, or some guy whiffs. It's always an effort play for him. And I thought those two guys, but really were set the tone for the whole defense, and just a great effort, and just played hard the whole game.
And that's where you look at the end of the season, who were your number one and number two guys in sacks and tackles for loss? Two guys that Derek just mentioned, Carter Coughlin and Sam Renner. Sam Renner is able to get a huge third down sack to start the second half, where he sets up the right guard perfectly by getting vertical, chops his hand, spins back inside. There's no help. Bo Nix goes down. Minnesota gets off the field. Now, does Carter Coughlin wish on, I think, two or three different occasions when he gets a free run at the quarterback, he should break down sooner to make sure that Nix, who's already a very slippery quarterback, can't escape the pocket? Certainly. But we're also talking about a guy like Carter Coughlin who has 40 tackles for loss in his career, 22 sacks, 8 forced fumbles. To me, he lived up to expectations. Now, I don't know how high of an NFL draft pick he's going to be, but certainly being able to put his skill set on display at the Senior Bowl is going to help. Those two guys, I mean, you couldn't have come from any more different backgrounds in terms of Carter Coughlin was one of the top recruits in the nation. Sam Renner walked on. He didn't have anything else going on. And at the end of their season, Sam Renner has developed into an NFL prospect. Carter Coughlin remains one. But they both played a huge part in Minnesota winning this game because Auburn couldn't run the football. 26 attempts for 56 yards, 2.2 yards per carry. That's sensational. And I think that maybe another underrated guy who it sounds like is going to be back for his sixth year is going to be Mikeadu Treadway. Mikeadu Treadway played, I think, one of his best games. He was very, very good at holding the A-gap, and he was very good at making sure that his linebackers or safeties could flow through. And if he wasn't the one making the play on a run play near the line of scrimmage, if it was between the tackles, it was somebody coming through the gap he opened up. And that's something you're not going to see on the stat sheet. I think that the defensive tackles played really well. I think Winston had one of his best games with that forced fumble, and him being able to set the edge as well, really preventing Auburn from getting into space, which is where they were going to win that game. But just even all those guys, I mean, Winston DeLatte-Boudaire, just the heart and soul of that entire defense is going to be missed. And his energy every single day in practice, I know, made a ton of guys so much better, because maybe it's a Wednesday practice and Derek can attest to it. You know it's going to be tough. Or it's a Tuesday practice and you know it's going to be the first one in full pads since Saturday. Well, if you have a guy bringing the energy, he makes that a little bit less difficult and more and just better to be around. So both of those, I mean, all those guys played a huge part in shutting down Auburn's rushing attack, which at the end of the game, you look at Minnesota being able to double up Auburn in total yards with 494 compared to 232. Yeah, you take out those two plays in terms of the kickoff return touchdown and the busted coverage, Minnesota wins this game easily. But they like to make it very interesting down the stretch, which made for some compelling television. And for those of you that were down there, it was a heck of a game.
All right, so let's maybe quickly talk about, before we get to special teams, this squad's going to lose a lot of guys on defense, right? And a number of these were Jerry Kill recruits too as well. And this probably brings to the end. Ryan, explain to me how we're going to fill these voids.
Ain't that the question? Because you're losing a lot. I mean, you're losing, let's go through it. Carter Coughlin, Sam Renner, Winston DeLatte-Boudaire, Thomas Barber, Kamal Martin, Chris Williamson, potentially Antoine Winfield. Those are a lot. Those are guys that even in the last 2-3 years have played a cornucopia of snaps for this Gopher defense. And now we're going to find out if PJ Fleck has recruited anything defensively, because we're going to be heading into year 4. You've had time to get these guys up to snuff. You've had time to get these guys ready. So we're going to see what life after Winfield looks like. I would imagine it's probably going to be either Tyler Newbin or Calvin Swenson. We'll see there. At the linebacker position, I'm incredibly interested to see who emerges there. Now, I don't think that Sorry Marin or Oliver have shown anything consistently enough that really kind of pencils them in as the front runner. because I think Donald Willis and DJ Gordon are guys that coming into their second year in this spring are really going to be competing. You also have guys like Cody Lindenberg, Lucas Finney, Jaquandis Burns, Itavian Brown. I think it's going to be a very open competition all the way up to the Florida game. Is it Florida Atlantic or Florida International? Which one's Willie Taggart at?
I think Florida Atlantic.
Okay, so it's Lane Kiffin's old place. Yeah. And that's where you're going to get to see them get some run. And I wouldn't be surprised if they rotate guys a lot consistently throughout the 2020 season, linebacking core. And then we're going to find out how good Boye Mafe could be. And if he actually does have the Burns curse, where I tweeted it out during the game, he's my breakout guy for 2020 defensively. If it's not next year, I don't know when it's going to be, because there's no more Devers and no more Coughlin. And as of coming in the spring, I don't know who else would be behind him besides D.V. Harris at that rush end spot. We're also going to see a full-time workload for Asezi Otemiwu going into year four. Is he going to be ready? Then we're going to find out how good that 2018 and 2019 defensive line classes were that were able to redshirt. Can D'Angelo Griffin get into the mix to replace Sam Renner at that three technique along with Keontae Shad? A lot of interesting things, a lot of things I'm definitely going to be looking for in spring ball, and I'll be covering it all on Gopher Illustrated.
All right, before we give Mr. Burns Mr. Ryan Burns a platform to spew his disdain for Gopher special teams in the 2019 season, Derek, did you have any disdain you'd like to spew towards Gopher special teams?
Well,
Derek, you would do a much better job. We talked about it in the pre-production meeting. You would do a much better job at explaining what happened on that kickoff return where the Auburn guy ran straight and then took a left and he wasn't touched, which sick special teams coverage. But Derek can explain it more intelligently than that.
Well, from what I could tell, I took a look at the play, and what Minnesota did on their kick coverage is they play like a switch concept where some of the guys lined up to the kicker's left, run behind the kicker, and vice versa. Some of the guys to the right run behind the kicker and switched sides. And this is done to confuse the blocking, because kick return blocking is usually numbered off. So pre-snap, you're counting guys off on who you're going to block in a man situation. You know, I have the third guy from the sideline, or I've got the first guy on the kicker's left or whatever. So when you run that switch concept, you're trying to mess up the team's blocking. But the problem that I saw was Auburn had like a middle right return on, basically a middle return, ran it up the seam. And in that switch concept, you want to maintain lane integrity, just like on defense, gap integrity. But when you see a middle return, you have to squeeze that, because Auburn is going to take eight blockers and bring them all to the middle of the field. Well, if you have your 10 coverage guys spread out from sideline to sideline, you're going to have a numbers mismatch of eight blockers in the middle versus maybe four or five defenders. So they just, those outside contained guys didn't squeeze it in. And so that's where Ryan, you saw, take it up the middle, and the runner never had to change direction because they didn't have enough defenders in the, just plain and simple, they didn't have enough defenders coming to the middle of the field, just squeezing that in. And it just made for an easy return.
I know that, first of all, I know the brand strong when Gopher special teams just goes full Gopher 2019 special teams. And I kid you not, I probably got 30 tweets before I even clicked send. You all knew to send it my way. Send the disdain. I hear you. We can vent together in the words of Paul Allen, the therapeutic Davenport of love between us, Gopher Twitter. We can vent together. We can work through it, because I am not going to miss 2019 special teams one bit. I'm not going to miss this sad squib kicks because Wenger doesn't trust his kickoff unit and he doesn't trust his kickers to be able to consistently put it into the end zone for a touchback. I'm not going to miss this non-existent kick return game, of which Demetrius Douglas is told to fair catch it at the four when the Auburn defenders or the Auburn kickoff team isn't at the 30 yet. Thanks, Rob. I'm not going to miss the non-existent punt return game. I might miss Jacob Herbers a little bit, Luke, just for the whole sentimental aspect, because he performed pretty, I mean, he was admirable. He was fine over like the last six games. He had a lot inside the 20 of his punts, but again, I'll be looking forward to the days of a punt average consistently over 40 yards. And I'm ready for it to be over. I'm so glad it is over. There were some people down in Tampa that I was talking with, some GI members or just people who listen to the podcast, and they would get me going. They wanted me to talk special teams, and I would get infuriated pretty quick. And I'm going to be incredibly inquisitive to see what PJ Fleck does with Rob Wenger, because I can't even formulate words on how you can possibly bring Rob Wenger back, but we'll see what PJ Fleck decides.
It'll be interesting too to see, you know, they traditionally have played a lot of younger guys on special teams, especially in coverage, and you know, maybe they take a different philosophy.
And if they were that bad, yeah, that's going to be an issue down the line, because if they're not good on special teams, how can you expect to count on them on offense or defense? Which, if that is truly the case, and your young coverage guys and your young linebackers just are atrocious on special teams, you're going to be atrocious on defense, because if you won't hit somebody on special teams, or if you can't provide something there, I mean, that's how some big question marks come up. So maybe it's foreshadowing coming up here defensively, but I do want to get your guys' thoughts on what I thought was the turning point of the game. And that was Auburn's decision to fake punt it. Now, to set the scene, Minnesota's two previous offensive drives have gone nowhere. It totaled 40 yards. Minnesota was having a lot of issues moving the ball to start the second half, whereas Auburn is having a lot more success. The game was tied at 24. Auburn had an opportunity to pin Minnesota deep, and they ended up going for a fake punt, of which they were clamoring for pass interference. But from what I have searched on the Google machine, and I talked about it with Dan Owen up in the press box, was I don't believe there is anything. You cannot have pass interference on punt. You can't. I know that's a rule in the NFL. I believe that also trickles down to the college game, because if you did, all punters would do all the time would be, you're going to get it, you're going to throw it out to a gunner, and of course the guy defending him is not going to know the ball's coming, and it's going to be PI. Now, it was maybe a different story because that guy was technically lined up off the line of scrimmage, but to me, that ball was uncatchable. I know Auburn fans were clamoring for a flag, and Oliver probably did hold him a little bit, but the ball was so uncatchable to me. I just don't understand why you go for it there. Minnesota's offense hadn't done anything. You can just pin him inside the 10. Jacob Herbers, we know he's not going to be able to flip the field there. So why decide to go for it and give Minnesota momentum is my question. Am I misreading that, guys, or what do you think?
I'll defer to you first, Derek.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of odd. You have to, in order to call a fake punt, you had to have seen something on film. And what was interesting is that this maybe isn't directly answering your question, Ryan, but I just want to say the majority of the season, Minnesota ran with a punt safe. So they didn't do a run a punt block. They didn't run a punt return. They ran punt safe. And
can we talk about that? I totally forgot. This was the first time punt safe actually was the right play call. And they nearly screwed it up.
The one and only purpose of running punt safe is to not have a punt, fake punt, is to protect against a fake punt. So that's the only purpose of running punt safe. And, you know, I don't have all the plays charted in front of me, but I would be willing to guess 75% or more of the Gophers punt returns this year were punt safe. They weren't blocked. Maybe one or two punt blocks, if that. And then, certainly not a punt return. So, yes, that's a thing. And so, which makes me, I guess what I'm trying to say is it feeds into your questioning, Ryan, of why would Auburn choose to run a fake punt against a team that runs 95% punt safe?
Exactly.
Again, unless they had seen something on film that they thought that they could, run away with it.
No possible way, though, because Minnesota only sits in punt safe. Like, you're at midfield. I just feel like the costs outweigh the benefits 5 times to 1 in that scenario.
Yeah. And I the last thing I would say, and I'm just going to, I'd probably be roasted for being a homer here. I did, you know, see the replay, and I took another look at it watching the game back. I don't think he got held at all. I know I don't know if it was the sideline reporter was screaming he got held around the waist. And well, the game call, I think it was the sideline reporter that was going crazy, because he said, he grabbed him around the waist and his hands were near the waist, but I don't think he pulled them. If it was incredibly slight. So I don't think he changed the trajectory of the route or anything like that. That's everybody's going to have a different opinion. Yeah. So I think it's a moot point. I think it was an odd call. I agree with you. I don't know what they saw that made them think they can convert it. And I didn't think it was interference.
The only thing I'll also say, you guys watched from home.
Yeah.
How bad were the announcers? Because I was getting tweets consistently throughout the entire game where people were saying, you can tell these guys only studied Auburn because they thought Auburn was going to route. And then they just kept saying stuff like, well, Auburn's playing to win the game. Auburn's playing to win the game. And they didn't know anything about Minnesota. I mean, for you guys who watched it on TV, is that accurate or did I get some false info?
They weren't great. I think that
that's about as passive aggressive Minnesotan as you can get.
Well, I wouldn't say they're horrible. I think the production value is terrible because they missed the fourth down touchdown to Bryce Witham. They like legitimately missed it live. We just saw the celebration. Now they showed a replay, but yeah, I mean, overall, I feel like we got kind of like the C team on the broadcast in total.
Gotcha.
Like it wasn't great. I will add one thing to the fake punt. What a terrible snap on the fake punt. He put it almost over his head where the punter has to leap to grab it. And then I guess everybody was just a little nervous for that call.
I didn't even think Auburn's punt returner, again, we talked about him coming in, Luke, who is incredibly explosive. If you want to know how to not play a punt as a punt returner, you watch the one he muffed. He was like way late on that. And then he tried to have like some kind of a running start with it. Again, the costs outweigh the benefits there. He muffs it, Minnesota recovers, gets great field position. He even bobbled another one. And that's the craziest part, Luke, is for how bad Auburn special teams were, they still, in my opinion, weren't the worst on the field.
Yeah, well, you have a lot of scars, I should say, from the other one. It wasn't good. Okay, I don't know if we have any more in specific to this to this specific game. Anything you guys want to end with, at least from the bowl game, etc., from this perspective?
I mean, I would just say that I don't know how you cannot be through the roof excited about what's to come. You won 11 games for the first time since 1905. Now, you can say what you will about the schedule, but Illinois, Northwestern, Indiana, and Purdue have never won 11 games in their entire football histories. You beat two top 10 teams, including one at home. You had an incredibly crazy November that saw you beat a top 5 team at home. You had college game day in town. You were playing for the Big Ten West. You saw an offense break records left and right. You saw Tyler Johnson become the all-time leading receiver in terms of yards, in terms of touchdowns. He leaves second all-time in catches. Tanner Morgan, we actually have a good Gopher quarterback to talk about coming back. He's second team all Big Ten and arguably was the best passing quarterback in the conference. You return your entire offensive line, all 6 of them. You have an opportunity to build depth there. Arguably the best athlete we've seen on offense since Lawrence Maroney returns when Rashad Bateman comes back. Mo Ibrahim, we get to see what he looks like with a full workload. And the schedule next year, we've talked about it on this podcast, looks pretty conducive for Minnesota to make another legitimate run in the Big Ten West. I don't know how you cannot be excited about what you've seen, what's coming back. Now, Minnesota's got some holes to fill defensively with personnel. They have to figure out what they want to do at the offensive coordinator position. They have to figure out if the risk is worth the reward in terms of bringing Rob Wenger back for another year. But you certainly have a lot of pieces in place to be a consistent contender in the Big Ten West with Iowa and Wisconsin. You have to go out and prove that against those two teams next year. But I think it put an exclamation point on one of the best seasons in, I think, the last 60 years for Gopher football. With the number of big-time wins, with college game day coming to town. And maybe most importantly, I think it revitalized the fan base that had been largely dormant and largely sad to say you were a Gopher fan because you knew how mediocre that this team had been for a long time. Well, I can't tell you how much, I mean, from someone who was down in Tampa, it was 65-35 Gopher fans compared to Auburn. And many of you know geography. Auburn, Alabama is a lot closer to Tampa, Florida than Minneapolis is. And there were folks there left and right. There were folks screaming, row the boat. I had numerous players come up to me and say, this felt like a home game. PJ Fleck talked about afterwards. He couldn't thank the fans enough for making it feel like Minnesota was at home there. That's a fan base that is so excited about a team because they haven't had a lot of reasons to be excited. Well, you saw 11 wins. Be excited. You have 9 starters returning on offense. Be excited. And that's where, again, this is as excited of a writer as I've been to cover a Gopher football team in 2020. Coming up here, I mean, it's going to be a ton of fun. And it's fun to talk about winning football consistently, Luke.
Yeah, I'll say this. I'm not one that believes in you have a program-changing win. I don't think that the Auburn or the Penn State game was a program-changing win. I believe that you have to build sustainability. And I think one of the things that PJ Fleck has been able to show both at Western Michigan and here at Minnesota is that slowly and surely he's starting to build sustainability. He talks about culture over and over and over. I believe that definitely plays a role in building a program, but you have to be able to be consistent over a period of time rather than one game flips or one program changing win is going to flip the narrative for a program like Minnesota. And I think you're right, Ryan. We have something to look forward to. I'll shoot it to you, Derek, to get your perspective. But man, I am excited for the season, but I'm excited for the years to come as well, as long as they can keep PJ around. And I'm not scared that that's going to be a thing, but I do think that, you know, with him at the helm, there is reason to be confident.
Well, and I think I just wanted to say a couple things about bowl games. It kind of take a point out of Ryan's, what he said about re-energizing a fan base. What I wanted to say is if you're in favor of expanding the college football playoff, that doesn't mean you have to hate bowl games. Both things can be true. And I think that what's going on a little bit in college football right now is people are really pushing for an expanded playoff. And so they're trying to dump on bowl games and say, these are meaningless. And well, you know, we got to get rid of some of these or whatever. And I couldn't disagree with that more. I'm not opposed to expanding the college football playoff, but what a fantastic thing for Minnesota football this bowl game was. Ryan mentioned it, the fan base. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people that listen to this podcast, you're probably the most hardcore Gopher fan of your circle of fans or your people you work with or what have you. So you've probably, a lot of you have experienced how many people have come up to you after the bowl game and said, boy, what a game. Did you see that game? Did you see the bowl game? I mean, at the end of the day, a bowl game is great exposure for the program. I mean, it's New Year's Day. You know, to put it bluntly, nothing else is going on. People, it's a great captive audience to have. It's on a national stage. You're talking about, you know, a national telecast. And Ryan could probably speak more intelligently than I could in terms of a recruiting impact. But just for a fan base, you know, to have a New Year's Day bowl game, I think is great. And as far as the players, I have to imagine that you know, Tyler Johnson, no matter how long he plays in the NFL, whether it's 1 year or 15 years, he's still going to remember this bowl game. I mean, what a great thing for him. And so we've kind of gone back and forth about players sitting out a bowl game or doing this. And I'm my mind is kind of changing a little bit on that. I think that there's more and more of a case for these players playing in a bowl game. I understand the injury risk. I understand guys like Kamal Martin who are trying to rehab and things like that. I get that. That's not a problem. But boy, what a just all around a fantastic fun thing the bowl game was. And you know, I would just close by saying the excitement for next year should be at an all-time high, as Ryan eloquently put, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And this is, I'll say it one more time, I touched on it in the last couple podcasts, this is a lot of what I think Minnesota college football fans have missed over the last 20 years is some of these really fun top 10, the game days, New Year's Day bowl games, things like this. Big time college football is a lot of fun, and it was really good to get a taste of it this season.
And to be honest, and I don't know if it's recency bias or what may be, but I really think when we reflect back on this season and just the players that Minnesota's had, I really think we're going to think of Tyler Johnson and Rashad Bateman in the same breath as what many Gopher fans, including myself as a media member, do with Lawrence Maroney and Marion Barber. I mean, I think you are going to hear the names Johnson and Bateman synonymous with one another for a long, long time. And I really want people to just kind of want to get across to you is soak it in. And you don't want to remember this 10 years ago and think to yourself, man, I really wish I would have taken it back in more at the time. Let it soak in. I mean, Tyler Johnson, we talked about the number of records this young man has broken. Say what you will about Chris Ottman Bell, he's not going to beat Tyler Johnson. Now, Rashad Bateman has a chance to be, in my opinion, better than Tyler Johnson, but what they did all season long, and then they end up finishing number one and number two in the Big Ten in receiving yards for the first time in Minnesota's history. They both are first team all Big Ten. That's the first time that's ever happened from the same school at the wide receiver position in the Big Ten ever. You're talking about two first team all Big Ten receivers from the same school, and it's not named Ohio State. Soak it in, because it's something that you really need to appreciate before – no, it's something happens, but I'm not trying to end it on a weird or a negative note there, but it's more just, I really do truly think people should absolutely hold Tyler Johnson and Rashad Bateman in the same breath that they do Lawrence Maroney and Marion Barber.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think another thing, you know, to Derek's point, you know, this has been a lot of fun, and this market has missed out on this. In large part, the program has been elevated by PJ Fleck and his staff, but in the same respect, a decent foundation was laid by Jerry Kill. In his tenure, he did get them to a New Year's Day bowl. Unfortunately, they didn't win. He recruited some very good players that played in this game, and this really kind of brings that era to an end. And it ended in a sour way, basically every era ends. But in the same respect, the cupboard wasn't necessarily completely bare, but it wasn't as starry and rosy as the 10 wins they had preceding Fleck arriving, right? So I just wanted to say that. You know, I think that Kill and Clay's probably deserve some credit here with some of the guys that they brought in that PJ was a benefit to actually get to coach as well, especially on defense.
You're
right?
Get some angry people at you.
That's
you
fine.
I hope your mentions are what I hope. Like, if I were to have said that, sweet Moses, would that not go well for me?
Yeah. So that's fair. I'm fine with that.
I mean, Coughlin, Kamal, Thomas, Winfield. I mean, those are huge.
Rodney Smith.
I like Tyler Johnson to a degree, but again, that recruiting story, I mean, it took him essentially only because he was a Minnesota kid. They didn't really like Tyler Johnson at camp. Brian Anderson wouldn't play Tyler Johnson as a true freshman. Tyler Johnson would not be what he is today without Matt Simon.
Right.
Now,
no question.
We can get into a different story, but in that same, I don't know that Kamal, you know, yes, they brought in the talent, and we've talked a lot about on this podcast, Luke, about talent acquisition being the most difficult part, and then it becomes talent development and talent deployment. But we're going to, I guess, find out in 2020 what this team defensively is about. I mean, Winfield, the first team All-American, but in that same breath, Winfield was set to leave before PJ took over,
right?
Because of what Clay's and, you know, the lack of discipline had dragged his son through with this university, and Fleck was able to make him stay. Kamal had been sporadic as a true freshman with Tracy and them, and then he turned into arguably the most impactful player on the defense. Maybe Thomas is the same, maybe Carter is the same, but I don't know. Yes, they brought him in, but it's tough to say that they would have been developed as well as what they were.
Yeah, it will be interesting. I don't think anybody questions that PJ Fleck, you know, in his regime can coach offense. No question, right? I think the question has always been whether or not that they can coach defense, and maybe we can have this can be a whole separate podcast, right? But that said, it took literally firing his first choice at defensive coordinator to get them where they were, right? And he made the right move. And I was wrong on Rossi. I admit that wholeheartedly. They were very stable this year. But at this point, now they're going to have to play with all their players. And let's see how that goes. And I really hope they've identified some talent. And they can definitely develop it, that's for sure. So maybe we shouldn't end in an argument.
Well, I guess we could end it in saying thank you. Because it has been... I mean, this will be it for a little while. I mean, we might do another episode here this month, depending on what news comes out about the old coordinator and the other hires. Luke and I'll probably be back. Plus, we got to do a national signing day one yet. But I mean, it's been an incredible run, and I mean, Luke will tell you our numbers are at all-time highs. I mean, I can't tell you how many people I had come up to me in either Tampa or at an event for the GLC or just out and about that were like, "Hey, we love the podcast. Keep it up." And again, it's not glamorous. I think Luke, you're sitting in your basement. I'm sitting in my office, and Derek,
where do you sit?
Yeah. I'm in my basement. I got to keep the tradition of you two alive. I'm in my basement as well.
That's awesome.
And that's where, I mean, we even saw this year, we were able to afford to send Derek some actual audio equipment so people can stop trolling us. I mean, it's a lot of fun to talk about an 11-win team. And it's a lot of fun to see so many more Gopher fans kind of come out of hiding again and listen to the podcast and come out to events and really not be afraid to wear your maroon and gold because of scrutiny from whether it's the pro sport team fans in town or, you know, whether it's the bordering states. I mean, I think Minnesota is going to be a team to be reckoned with for a long time. And it showed up in your support for this podcast. And we cannot thank them enough, Luke.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a lot of fun. Derek, thank you again for joining us this year. I would say that in the power rankings order of why people listen to this podcast, number one, it's you. Number two, it's Ryan Burns. And
no,
there is
number three. It would be your enunciations. I just ramble on, and then people get mad at me and send me passive aggressive tweets or emails. So I'm just here to fill time. I'm your filibuster, as somebody would put it.
Derek, literally, somebody filled out a review and just said that Ryan filibuster.
It'd be like that. So again, those of you who love the podcast and you want to get more Gopher information, that's where my full time gig is at Gopher Illustrated, and it's $1 to join. I make a ton of stuff free. I think like 80% of the stuff I write is free because I want you to become a more knowledgeable Gopher football fan. And if you want to help support me, that's how you can get over to Gopher Illustrated and become a member on what I think is the largest Gopher football fan board or just Gopher sports fan board. And I think this the discussion is what keeps you there. So it's been a heck of a run, boys.
Yeah, it's been fun. Thank you all for listening. Thanks to the GLC and for Burns Insurance for sponsoring us this season. It's been a ton of fun. Thank you for listening, and go Gophers.